Welcome to the Washington Heights Church weekly podcast. We do this to help people feel at home at WHC, where we help people meet and follow Jesus. Thank you for joining us. Well, joining me here today on our podcast is Pastor Jimmy. And on a future episode, we're going to get to know a little bit of what makes Jimmy tick and all of that, where he's from and things like that, as we try to help you understand a little bit more about the staff here so that you can feel a little bit more at home at Washington Heights. But today, our focus for this interview is around the topic of missions. And missions, you know, is something that we do overseas, and it's also something that we've really begun to focus more on here at home in recent times. But Jimmy, you have been a part of missions for a long, long time. I know it's even what you did before you came on staff here at Washington Heights. But tell us, just, you know, at the most basic level, why missions? Why go to places like India and Guatemala and Peru and many others?
I don't know. When I look at the life of Christ, I just see who he worked with the most. And, you know, I just see the difference it makes and just working with the poor, the need. I absolutely, for my bent, I love working in those environments when people have nothing and just trying to love on them. And they're so happy, Roy. You've been there. You've seen it. These people are so happy.
Yeah, I always feel like I go to a third world country and go with the idea that we're going to help them, and I always feel like I come back having received more than I gave there.
Every time, and I think that's what drives me going there. And I think one of the other things that drives me going to certain countries like that is just to remind me of all the things I have here. And that I actually should simplify my life and look at my life a little differently. That's on a personal level. For everyone, it's a little different, you know?
Yeah, it's a hard lesson to keep once you get back.
Dude, I'm still trying to figure it out because, you know, I am the rich young ruler over there, and it's just a tension I live in with the amount I have, and then what am I supposed to do with it? And so, I don't know, my bent is driven towards mission. As you said, it's something I used to do before I came on staff at Washington Heights. I absolutely love people. I don't know what it is. I love all people, all places, all times. And so going overseas is just, man, it's kind of a passion. I think you've seen it.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, I think even when we go back to Jesus' words, you know, his final words to his disciples, you know, he said, go and make disciples. You know, and we say that as helping people meet and follow Jesus of all nations, right? And I think sometimes we even take his words to go to the ends of the earth and, you know, to go wherever is needed. And here we are in a culture that has the opportunity to do that. You know, a lot of the people that we meet and interact with, they don't even have that opportunity. They probably couldn't afford to leave their own country and go anywhere.
No, I think you and I, we've seen places like that in the world that most people within those cultures and those environments, they're probably going to live and die in a 60-mile radius. And we can travel overseas as often as we really want. We have the ability to actually go in debt. They can't even go in debt. They're so poor, they can't even go into debt. So it's a whole nother level of understanding.
Yeah.
You know.
And the central focus of the trips that we have overseas is to link that to a local church. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's really important that we have a connection, that we don't come in as just a, you know, short-term mission and do our own thing and then just leave it in disarray or just, you know, have no connection there. It's so important for us to have a local connection at a church level to where we're able to, anything we do is just help boost up the visibility of that church in a short term without destroying anything while we're there as Americans, because we bring such a highlight to who we are when we show up. Everyone's just curious. They're showing up. And that could be good and bad depending on our motive and what we're doing. And so working with that local church helps us minimize it and direct it for their best. They can leverage it for the best.
But we come home. They have to stay there.
Yeah.
Right? So we go to serve them and just try to set them up, you know, to be more effective as a result of our being there.
Yeah, absolutely. And then in some of our places we go, it's taken us many years just to get them to trust us in our relationships with them, you know, because we're perceived as rich, they're poor, and they don't want to tell us what to do. When, you know, so if we ask them, hey, should we do this? You know, we kind of have an idea. They'll always say yes. And we don't want them to say yes every time. We want them to say what they need because it's their country, their people. And so sometimes it takes a couple of years for them to get it. I remember talking to one guy and I'm like, you're the boss. And he's like, no, I'm not. You're the boss. I'm like, I'm not the boss. This isn't my country. I go, you come to my country, I'm the boss. I go, but I'm in your country. You're the boss. And so I go, please, you know, tell us exactly what you think. And so it takes us a little while, actually, before we can get that rhythm with them to where they trust us. And they'll start sharing a little bit of their, yeah, okay, well, what if we do this? You know, you can tell they're just tiptoeing around us, too.
Yeah, there's definitely some cultural barriers that need to be crossed there. And
yeah.
And again, I think that is best done when you just go with a mindset of serving,
yeah,
and of learning, realizing we don't have all the answers. And just because of the way we do it doesn't mean it's right. You know, it may be right here.
Right. And I think our philosophy of ministry in missions is just to be able to partner with the local community overseas, have somewhat of a bridge and connection here if we can with that. So we want to support where we go. And then to go really in a serving mentality, not in like, hey, I want to go and teach you this and do this, or, you know, well, these are my ideas. This is what we think should work for your country. That is not our philosophy. That is not who we are. Yeah. And we, as you know, we really prefer to work with the local leaders, not with the Americans. I'm not opposed. I am an American, but it's a different dynamic, wouldn't you say?
Oh, for sure. And yeah, I was going to ask you about some of the local national leadership you have met. Talk about some of them.
Yeah, they're dynamic. I remember talking to one guy sitting around. His name is Otto De La Cruz. We were all sitting at McDonald's asking him questions. And I felt like it was the first time he got real with us after being there for a number of years, us off and on in trips. We asked him, like, we're rich. You're poor. You know, you don't have much. What would you tell us? What would you want to tell us? Directly, he goes, you should serve God with more enthusiasm because of what you have. And I never forgot that. I'm like, that is going to haunt me till I die.
That'll preach right there.
but he's totally right. And so working with the local leaders for us has just been an incredible experience. It's a little tricky at times because you don't have the American delegate in a sense to buffer. Perhaps some of the obstacles you're going to hit overseas. And so you're kind of doing it on the fly with them because they're trying to figure out your culture. You're trying to understand their culture, but man, it makes a great experience in the end. If you're just flexible.
Yeah. And the situation I was thinking of with national leadership, and you were there too, was in the country of Haiti. And, you know, they were devastated with an earthquake several years ago. They've been, you know, just a poor nation, one catastrophe after another. And it would be easy to think that there just isn't any hope, there isn't any vision there. But boy, right. Is that not true. And I remember sitting around a table with pastors, and they had a vision to reach the whole country.
Yeah.
And they just didn't have the resources to do it. And when I think of that kind of a partnership, where God, for whatever reason, has blessed us with tremendous resources, and here are incredible men and women, you know, that we've met all around the world, and they serve God with courage and with passion, and if we could develop those relationships and resource people like that, I just wonder, you know, how much impact there could be.
Yeah, I think they have the ability already within them to reach their country. They're all gifted, like you said. They're just dynamite. Men and women who love God, but what can we bring to the table? You know, and I think, like you said, it's resources. God has blessed us as a nation, as individuals, as a church here at Washington Heights with resources. Not to kind of throw our ideas out there. We can throw them or tell them what they should do, but to say, hey, we want to support your vision. How can we do it? Because when we show up with the gift baskets and just parade people with candy everywhere we go, we create a horrible dynamic between us and the people. And you've seen it. I've seen it. It's like a riot.
So explain the use of a water balloon launcher that is frequently a part of a trip that you lead.
I don't know what is that you're talking about, but I think I'm the water king in at least five countries.
I'd probably double that.
Yeah. We take water balloon launchers and have fun with the kids. We don't ever let them have them, but man, we have a lot of fun. It is a dynamite time with them. Just playing. Just love. You know, anyone can go on these trips. They're like, well, I'm not a missionary or something like that. Well, you're not going to be. What you're going to do is you're going to go and serve, right?
Yeah. and smiles and fun. And I think we've also found game sports, right? Oh. Just as a universal language that bridges a whole bunch of gaps very quickly.
You throw a soccer ball in the midst of just a whole bunch of kids and you're gonna see them light up and take off immediately. They know what to do. And, man, they can beat us 10 to 1.
Yeah, you'll have a tournament by the next day.
But don't do the Americans against them because they're going to beat you every time.
Oh, they'll slaughter us. Hey, let me shift gears a little bit. You know, every other year here at Washington Heights, in the even number years, which is this one, we would do international projects. Now, this year we've been surprised by something, you know, called COVID-19 here. So three of our four trips that we planned for this year had to be canceled. The trip to the Bahamas happened, but three other trips did not.
So, yeah, Haiti, Guatemala, and India got canceled.
Yeah. So what do you envision for the future? Do you think those trips, you know, will be able to be done later this year, or are we looking to just jump to 2022?
Yeah, it's a good question in case people are still wondering about that. I think it would be premature for us to jump to any trip this year, because even if America gets under control when it comes to the coronavirus, we can't predict what it will do in a third world country, where it's often where we'll go. And also their testing ability could be very different than ours. And so we don't want to bring anything back, and we sure as heck don't want to get anyone sick over there. If we can do one trip next year and then continue on with our community project, that would be a win for me. But that's still out there, and a lot is determined by the health of the world and what's going on. Yeah. We'll get back into it, but God's not done with us. We're still doing other things.
No, we have to be smart about what's going on.
Absolutely.
Now, but it certainly has not derailed that overall vision. And I think it's also allowed us the opportunity to get a little creative here at home, and maybe that we can shift more to what we're doing in terms of missions right here in Ogden or the surrounding areas. It was, well, I don't know, several years ago now that, you know, we were talking as a staff, and there was a question born out of a particular book that we were going through that in essence asked this question, you know, if your church disappeared, one, would the community notice
that
you were
that.
Gone? And, you know, what would their reaction be? You know, and I think sometimes, unfortunately, a church, if it disappeared, maybe the community would go, good. You know, and other times they might go, oh, man, that's a shame. And that really caused us to take a look, you know, at what we were doing beyond our Washington Heights location. Talk about some of the ways that unfolded from there.
Yeah, so we basically switched kind of direction when it came to missions, and looking at it based upon what you said. God had blessed our church over a number of years in allowing us to do programs and events that were pretty popular within the community. But as we talked as a staff, as I talked to you, I thought we could do things in the community rather than trying to bring them on campus too. It's always been hard and challenging in the past years to get people to kind of just get involved locally. Overseas is always exciting. And so after talking to Roy and the staff, we decided to cancel all mission trips one year. It's kind of risky and scary. And just 2010, I distinctly remember the first one and saying, okay, we're going to try to just serve our community and see how it rolls out. And so I worked with the city, met with the mayor, and then this is Ogden City, and that was our first one. And then did what's called a serve project, where we did about 24 homes that year, about 500 people in 1 week.
Yeah. And even before that, right, our first venture into this was painting all the fire hydrants.
I forgot. That's 2009.
In Ogden City. And it really began with asking a novel question. How about this, right? Going to the city and saying, what do you need?
That's exactly how it began.
Right. Like, and they didn't have that money in their budget.
Nope.
And so we covered that and broke the city up into quadrants. And
yeah, so I broke the city up into 82 quadrants. I can see the map in my head. And so out of that, we ended up getting 400 signups. And with that, we could divide people. They can pick a quadrant and do, I don't know, anywhere from 12 to 20 fire hydrants, which goes extremely fast. And so we ended up with that many people, about 400, and that many quadrants. I think it was approximately like maybe 2,200 fire hydrants. And we did them all on the same day. And it was just like, can we do more maybe next time?
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. The only downside of that is that they were painted that hideous Green Bay Packer, green and yellow. Blue and silver would have been so much better.
I think Roy's were blue and silver, though. If you go out in the community right now, you'll still find them. There's about 10 of them out there.
What do you think the impact of doing those local serve projects has been?
You know, it's one of my favorite verses in Matthew 5:16. It just talks about, you know, let us do basically such good in the community that people ask why. And, you know, like, what is going on? And I think the impact has been absolutely tremendous because we do it with no strings attached. And that's the biggest thing is we don't do it to try to get something from someone or anything. We're just like, you know what? You're our community. We love you. We're a church in your community, and we just want to show you love. And so we go out and do it. And there's a huge response to those driving by who will often stop, and they have cried in the past of just the homes we're working on, and they live in this community, just blown away to stop and giving us popsicles because they're just like, what are you guys doing in this heat? And so the local events that we have done have just turned into something bigger than I can ever imagine, which is, I mean, God's involved, thank the Lord.
Yeah, and we're not seeking a specific outcome, but there have been a number of them. Talk a little bit about the relationship we have even with Ogden City as a result of some of the projects.
Yeah, we have worked with several cities, particularly Ogden, because that's where we're located, in such a way that our relationships, even with the city, have just gone probably tenfold. We'll do videos. They'll actually host some of their videos of what we have done in their community in their own building. If there's an emergency or something they need, which has been in the past, they'll call us. They trust us. There's like goodwill and good faith between us and them that they'll just give us a call and like, hey, are you guys able to do this? Can you do this? Which, where does that happen in the world today that a city calls you, a church, to just ask? Because they know we're going to come and love them. We're not going to come and preach to them. We're just going to say, we love you guys. And they're still trying to figure it out. And it's just beautiful. It's a beautiful rhythm.
Yeah, and we talk about compassion as showing God's love in practical ways. What kind of impact do you think that makes to the kind of culture that we live in today in America?
Yeah, I think if anybody has grown up or lives in a culture to where everything's done with something in mind or a gain at the end of some sort, you understand that that's the culture kind of we live in, that you can't do anything just for the sake of love because there has to be something behind it or some checkpoint or maybe some brownie point or something like that for you or for them. But to just actually do things in a culture for the sheer sake that you love them confuses the heck out of them, Roy. They're just so confused. But they feel, the coolest thing is they feel the genuineness of who we are as a Washington Heights, as individuals, just in Christ, just loving them. And then they're blown away. Many of them just break down and cry because they're like, I just don't understand. They're not used to receiving anything free with no strings attached, like grace. Like, wow, imagine that. Because that's what we experience all the time, grace.
And, you know, there have been hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years where the church has kind of occupied the center square of American culture, you know, of the Judeo-Christian values, and even you to go to Western Europe and other places, it's been in place for so long, but not anymore. Mm-hmm. And that ship has kind of sailed. And, you know, it really, I think, calls us to look at times when the church was on the fringe like it is now and increasingly moving in that direction. And, you know, the church was born in a time like that. In the Roman Empire, you know, there was a dominant culture, and it certainly was not the Judeo-Christian culture value system that was in place. And yet, that church had dramatic impact. And when you look at what they were doing, you know, they weren't picketing, you know, they weren't, you know, going after people. They did not pursue a political agenda. Yeah. They were serving in radical ways. And history tells us during times of plague, they took either sick people into their homes, sometimes got sick themselves. They buried people who died as a result of that. And a watching culture asked that same question that you were talking about. Why? Yeah. Why would you do this? And then it goes back to, well, there was this one named Jesus. We're just trying to follow his example and trying to make it real. We follow him, so we try to make real what he did. Sounds like we're returning to those kind of roots.
Oh, yeah. And what I think I absolutely love about Jesus is he, you know, when he talked about loving your neighbor, he didn't define it. If he had defined who the neighbor was, that would have been pretty dangerous, because I think you and I, all of us, what a stereotype to our neighbor would have been. But in his case, he just left it open-ended, because that's the way it should be. So no matter who I run into, they are my neighbor, and I should treat them as my neighbor.
Yeah, a master teacher isn't going to just give you an easy checklist you can be done with in one afternoon.
Like, there we go, I'm done.
Yeah, right. When are we done? As Jesus told us, love one another as I've loved you.
Yeah.
Not this side of heaven.
No, never, never. No, it's a beautiful thing.
And, you know, Jimmy, I think also that switch of moving off of our campus site into the community also, in the bigger picture, just reflects a recognition that less and less are people going to come to us just of their own accord, you know, because they decide, hey, one day I should go to church.
Right.
But rather, we need to meet them where they are.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we can, to help them see who Jesus is. Not that that's who we are, but that is who we are trying to represent as his ambassadors. But we have to get from here to wherever that might be.
People aren't looking for somebody who's got it all together. I mean, that's just like the last person they want to run into if they think they have it all together. They want to run into people who are transparent, genuine, authentic, people who love, which is a very difficult thing sometimes in today's society. Because if you love someone, you often think it's going to come with some type of string attached. What do you want from it? I was at the dump 2 days ago. I had to make doing my honeydew list and had to go to the landfill 5 times in the same day. And this was just Tuesday. And so it was just constant, just filling it up, taking over there. So the first round there, it was really interesting that I just check in, pay, then you go around. There's a couple different stations on your way in. The last station before I went and parked to unload my truck, there was a lady standing there and or sitting there telling me kind of where to go and stopping everyone at first. And I'm like, how you doing, ma'am? Because that's just my personality. And she's like, well, it's just been really hard. And she, you could tell, you know, she's had a rough life a little bit, middle age and stuff. And like, I am so sorry. And this was my first load. And now I can see her 5 more times, I know, because I'm coming through. So I go through again once more. And I said, you know, how you doing? Just good to see you. I'm so sorry. And then on my third trip, I stopped by the store. I'm like, she just needs flowers. She just needs to know she's loved. So I swung by, got some flowers, took them up to her. And when she's, you know, I said, hey, I know life, you know, has been difficult and I can't change everything about life. I go, but maybe I can help your day. And I go, I just want you to know you're loved. Gave her those flowers. Dude, she started bawling. Then I, of course, you know me, Roy, I start crying.
I know.
But I think it's events like that within the community that we are not restricted by this thing called coronavirus. It is not inhibiting the church in any way. The only thing it's inhibiting the church is the individual, because we are the church. Church is still happening. I mean, all the time, and it should be. And we're designed for this, people. We are so designed to do this because God has given us the creability and the ability to be able to reach in our community now more than ever.
Yeah, it's not building rockets, is it?
Sometimes
it's just the simplest thing that lets people know that we care.
That's
or even
it.
That we're listening, right? Sometimes I think people feel like no one's even paying attention to them.
No, and it's just kind of acknowledging them, loving them. Maybe if there's a need, fulfilling a need, you know?
So fair to say, you know, there is missions that happens overseas, crossing cultures and all of that. But also there's a local aspect of it. And sometimes we work and you do a lot of the planning to make that happen for us as a group. But it's also an individual thing, right? It can be any day.
Yeah.
It can be anybody that we run across.
It's exciting when we do things in large groups. I mean, you feel the energy. We all come together. We do things overseas, locally. It is so exciting. But my encouragement to people is, you know, as God has designed us to do things like that, to also do it, like you're saying, individually, knowing that every day there is someone you can love, smile, take care of, maybe even meet a need in some small way.
Mm. Yeah, and hopefully that becomes more and more part of who we are. You know, there's that one passage that Jesus speaks, and I don't have the reference off the top of my head, but he talks about, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. And that always confused me right. for a long time. I thought, what does that mean?
Especially if you're left-handed.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
Well, I married a left-hander, so. I really come to understand what that means is that compassion and generosity would become so natural to us
yeah.
that we don't even have to think about it.
Right.
That it's just a part of who we are. And again, individually or corporately, here, there, doesn't matter. It's just what we do. Wherever we go, whoever we're with, that is a part of what defines us. And I think in this day, it really is part of that leading edge of helping people meet and follow Jesus. Because if we can engage our community with grace and compassion, I think we're starting, you know, what we pray will ultimately lead to Jesus. I think we're starting it with the right terminology and with the right visibility of what it means to belong to Jesus.
It is just, you know, God asks us just to love. It's so simple, but it's so hard, you know, and to not go and want to receive love or give love, but to be love like him. That is a challenge. That is a challenge.
Every day,
but they're out there and we can be it.
But it's a good challenge.
It's a good challenge.
Yeah, let's take it. Well, Jimmy, I'm going to wrap us up here. Thank you for joining us.
I thought we were just getting started, man. This is awesome.
Well, we are, but there'll be another day for you. Hit the pause button there, okay? Well, thanks for joining us on this podcast today, Jimmy, and thank you for everybody who's listening. And, you know, we sometimes hear that Washington Heights can be just large, overwhelming, and impersonal, and that is certainly not what we're shooting for. And so our hope with podcasts like this is that you feel a little bit more at home and that you understand a little bit more who we are and where we're going as this thing called Washington Heights Church.
Awesome.
We'll see you next time.
Thanks.
Thanks for joining us for the Washington Heights Weekly Podcast. A new podcast will post every Monday. We encourage you to check it out, subscribe to it as well. It'll come into your feed automatically. And if you want to share that with somebody that you know that maybe wants to find out a little bit more about Washington Heights, go ahead and share that. And we look forward to hearing from you as well. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.